Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
One of the president's ride or die defenders is legal advisor Jenna Ellis.
It's such a political prosecution and a political persecution.
Quote,
this to me is a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's revisionist originalism. Tolerance just isn't a two-way street with the Democrats. And I think that tells you all we need to know.
Newsmax contributor and former legal counsel to President Trump,
Jenna Ellis.
Good morning, and we're starting out on a fantastic note that just, you know, really makes me happy that there are still reasonable people that are voting in state and local elections. If you did not hear the news yet, let me be the first to bring it to you that Mayor Lori Lightfoot out of Chicago has not made the threshold for the runoff to keep her own seat. So she is officially out as mayor in the city of Chicago, and it was amazing watching all of the Twitter memes, and Beetlejuice was actually trending last night, which I thought was hilarious. But you know, this just shows that people are tired of Democrat rule when Democrats absolutely refuse to do a basic job that they are elected to do. So hopefully we will see some improvements in the city of Chicago, but Mayor Lori Lightfoot is out. So a great day. Also, the Supreme Court heard yesterday the two twin cases on student loan forgiveness, and that student loan forgiveness package from the Biden administration could be bigger even than the $400 billion bailout. And so at the Supreme Court, the Biden administration was hoping to justify its cancellation of some $400 billion student loans. And this was not just an issue of whether or not we particularly like the idea of student loan forgiveness, whether we think that that tax burden should be shifted to taxpayers. Really, the question is a constitutional one. Can the executive use the pretext of, in this instance, what they did, the HEROES Act, and say that just because there was a declared state of emergency during COVID, then this justifies a modification to student loan assistance. And the Biden administration did this without the authorization of Congress. So the question in front of the Supreme Court is, how far can the executive branch go to be a petty tyrant and just simply act unilaterally on their own rather than getting authorization from Congress? So GOP Representative Mike Collins joins me this morning on this and a couple of other issues that we will get to in a moment. But good morning, Representative Collins. And, you know, in my opinion, this is a clear violation of the separation of powers and of congressional authority. And so what is the GOP's reaction to this case in Congress?
Well, good morning, Jenna. And I appreciate you having me on. You know, it is a clear reaction of just an overreach. And I think not only the GOP and Congress, but I think all of America sees that. I thought it was I did not hear the news on Lightfoot. So you just made my day.
And, <You're welcome. laughs>
but I think that is a prime example, and you can even you take that over to this overreach from the federal government or the executive branch, and the American people are waking up to everything. You know, they decided to do this at the last minute, right before the midterm elections, and it was nothing but a vote buying scheme. You know, and on top of that, it's just a blanket forgiveness of all loans. Anybody that makes less than $125,000, it doesn't say, hey, if you were in distress or if you had problems, then we'll take a look at, you know, not just the pause button, but waiving it. And so that's just a clear overreach. The American people see that, especially in a time when inflation is so rampant. And to continue to give away money devalues a dollar. I mean, if you give somebody $5, what do they care if they pay $5 for a Coca-Cola? Wasn't their money anyway. You know, and so inflation is just going to continue to go rampant when you have schemes like this trying to be implemented by the executive branch.
Yeah, very well said. Representative Mike Collins is my guest this morning, and glad to break the news on Lori Lightfoot. Glad we started out on that very happy note. But you're absolutely right that this really was just a vote-buying scheme, because the Biden administration implemented this right before the midterms and even knew that this likely was unconstitutional, which of course it is, and it's a violation of the separation of powers. Nancy Pelosi even said that at the time, which was very interesting that she was even concerned about the separation of powers. And so this really begs the question, how far should the executive branch or any of Biden's agents be able to go knowingly violating their oaths of office without facing consequences of impeachment?
Yeah, well, and I think you're going to hear that. Plus, I think you're going to hear the results of the judicial branch exercising what they need to and striking this down and saying it's illegal. And then once they do that, then Congress can take action on where they need to make sure that people pay for just a blatant, just being blatant about the law and abusing it and actually make it is illegal. So, you know, you take the HEROES Act, of which they're bouncing off of, and the HEROES Act was put in place for military after 9/11, and to use that for something that's just so blatant of a vote-buying scheme speaks volumes to how low that the administration will go and to what they'll do just to remain in power. So I'm looking forward to the court making a decision. And then, you know, we have oversight in every committee we've got in Congress right now. And we'll take a look and see what exactly we can make to make sure that people are held accountable.
Excellent. And we don't expect this decision until probably May or June of this year, but we'll look forward to that. And then, of course, the majority's response. And speaking of potential impeachments and actually holding the Biden administration actors for their responsible for their own actions, you have recently also blasted Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who also former mayor Pete. So we're talking about a lot of, you know, really idiotic Democrat former mayors today. But you have blasted him for his Ohio response and said that impeachment is not off the table for him. So how are you getting involved, and is Congress getting involved with oversight of what happened in East Palestine, Ohio?
Well, I'm sure we'll have oversight over that, and we should, because and that's what we've been calling. We have been demanding that Pete Buttigieg resign. Because, number one, he was hired just as an identity politics hire, not for his expertise in the transportation industry. And he has used his identity politics to create a woke culture, not just throughout the agency, but even into corporations across this country that feel like that they have to institute some form of wokeness in order to stay in favor with the administration. You take that East Palestine, Ohio accident, which they're blaming it on wheel bearings. But you have a CEO in his latest 2022 ESG, the Environmental, Social, Corporate Governance Report, of which he proudly stated that they were going to ramp up their DEI initiatives and that woke culture. And we need people hiring people for positions. You know, instead of trying to grease that fourth wheel of bureaucracy, that fourth branch over there, the DOT, they should have been hiring people to grease wheel bearings. If the wheel bearing was the result of not just a failure of product, but a failure of a cultural implementation into a company. And even into the Transportation Administration. And that's why I say you can take any of those instances. I don't care if it was someone deleting a file in the FAA. That was the result of an administration that is focused on being woke. I mean, they changed the name of NOTAM from Notice to Airmen to Notice of Air Missions, a 176-page rule that cost who knows how many thousands of dollars. Instead of saying, hey, you know what, that's a 30-year-old program, maybe we should upgrade that, and oh, by the way, while we're at it, let's implement something called two-factor authentication. He doesn't know that. All they know is how to create an environment and a culture, and you see the results of it after 2 years. We've got a whole industry that was shut down. We've got planes that almost land on top of each other. We've got a train derailing for wheel bearings, supposedly, and we've got speeding trains that are having problems hitting trucks out there.
And I'm speaking with GOP representative from Georgia, Mike Collins. And, sir, this makes so much sense to ask Pete Buttigieg to resign. Clearly, he was just installed on a diversity quota, and just like a lot of other people in the incompetent Biden administration. But if he does step down, isn't it more likely than not that Biden would just replace him with someone else just as woke or just as diverse? Or, and I don't know if you have to, if you take out one woke person, then the rule is you have to install someone with an even more, diversity quotient and have even more of a victim mentality in that particular office. But is there something more long term that Congress can do to keep the executive from implementing these types of policies and putting people in cabinet positions just based on this diversity criteria instead of actual merit?
Yeah, and that's a very good question, but I always look back to the American people. As the American people wake up and they start to scratch their head as to what's going on up there? And then you say, okay, we're removing this person, and this is the reason that we're removing it. People understand that. And they start focusing on what the problem actually is. And I think they will demand, just like anything that gets passed up here, it really doesn't get passed until the American people demand it. The people in America see what is going on, or are beginning to see. And as we continue to get information out and the reason that we want to get rid of Buttigieg, sure, they'll put in somebody liberal. We know that. But at least the American people understand what the Biden administration is about, what they're doing, and they have an opportunity in 2 years to fix that and rectify that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that this is laying the foundation for the 2024 presidential race and for whoever jumps into that primary along with President Trump and Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley are a few that have already jumped in. And would you, sir, like to see from anyone in the GOP a commitment to not hiring based on ESG and the DEI metric and have that become a primary platform point and a promise from not only the members of Congress, of course, who are responsible for their own staff, but from the executive branch so that we don't see this at all replicated within the executive if a Republican gets back into the White House?
Oh, of course. And I think that everybody is going to be more than happy to jump on that just from the mere fact of you see the results. And I hate to say it, but you're going to continue to see the results of just how one person, Pete Buttigieg, has taken the Department of Transportation and transformed it into some sort of woke culture instead of people that are expertise in what they do. And we need that. You can take that to anything, even though we're to the military. You know, we've had discussions with generals. We don't need this woke culture in anything up here. We hire people. People join the military to defend this country, not to be diversified and cultivate some woke culture. So you can take that not just in the Department of Transportation, throughout all federal agencies. And I think that the GOP has got a great platform there just on that matter to run on.
Yes, well, 100%. Well, thank you so much, Representative Mike Collins, for joining me this morning. And I hope that if Pete Buttigieg doesn't resign, that at minimum, the House majority will institute impeachment proceedings, because that, of course, has been given to Congress in order to hold the executive branch accountable. And people say, well, you know, oh, well, if he's impeached or he resigns, then Biden will just implement and put in someone and install someone else. But this is all about accountability. And if Biden's people kept being impeached, then maybe he would have to go for someone at least a little bit, not as woke. So Representative Mike Collins, really appreciate your time this morning. We will be back focused on the 2024 presidential race. We'll be right back right after this on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
God made his design for marriage and family absolutely clear. Unfortunately, the world listens to Satan and therefore has a totally opposite view.
Your friend who is saying, I encourage my daughter to identify as my son because I want to be loving and accepting Christian, you need to say that is child abuse.
The Marriage Family Life Conference 2023 wants to restore God's plan. July 6th through the 8th at the Cadence Bank Arena and Conference Center in Tupelo, Mississippi, strengthen your marriage and your family with Dr. Kathy Cook.
So they choose the quality, they keep making the same choice, the ability develops, it becomes a natural part of who they are, it becomes a part of their character, it marks them.
Ryan Bomberger.
We are the ones who care for people after they're born. I mean, one of my parents adopt us and throw us in a cage. Hey, go fend for yourself.
No.
And many more. The Youth Apologetics track is back as well. The Marriage Family Life Conference 2023, for His glory alone. Register today at marriagefamilylife.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Vivek Murthy, United States Surgeon General. His office provides information, resources, and guidance in support of our country's policies related to medicine and health. Jeremiah 33:6 reminds us of God's gifts of health and healing. Behold, I will bring to it health and healing, and I will heal them and reveal to them abundance of prosperity and security. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Vivek Murthy in his role as Surgeon General. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary sponsored by Liberty University.
Liberty University's K-12 online academy is the best of a homeschool, private school, and Bible-based education all rolled into one. With LUOA, you can take charge of your child's learning environment and create a structured yet flexible schedule that works for your family. Our qualified teachers are easily accessible for guidance and support along the way. And with new classes starting every Monday, it's never too late to make the switch to LUOA. To learn more, text LUOA to 88741. That's LUOA to 88741.
Cracker Barrel has gone woke. The restaurant chain with the rocking chairs out front just rolled out a new item on the menu, something called Impossible Sausage, made from plants. Nothing says home-style breakfast like scrambled eggs and sausage made from azalea bushes and ferns. Cracker Barrel says customers are craving a nutritious plant-based option, but my social media feed says otherwise. Folks are riled up. They say the fake meat goes against Cracker Barrel's brand, a restaurant known for biscuits and gravy, comfort food, not health food. The average Cracker Barrel customer is not going to sit down for a plate of vegan biscuits with a side of almond milk gravy. By the way, the reason they called the sausage impossible? It's impossible to eat. Be sure to read my book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, now available at your favorite bookstore and online at toddstarnes.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And, you know, the 2024 presidential primary is already getting heated up. And my good friend Vivek Ramaswamy, who is now presidential candidate, Vivek, which I think is very exciting, will join us here in a few moments. But first, I want to talk about this a little more generally, because I know that our audience absolutely loves President Trump, as I do. We have a lot of Ron DeSantis fans, as I am. And so why then would we consider looking at someone like Vivek Ramaswamy, who is the first millennial presidential candidate, and how should we analyze that? Well, from my perspective, and of course, you know, I have known Vivek for a number of years as a good friend and as someone who has really solidly pushed back in the culture and in the entrepreneurial capitalist forum against ESG and DEI, and was actually one of the first prominent national voices with his book, Woke Inc. And I've had him on on prior shows that I've hosted, and I've been at conferences that he has spoken at, and I have found him over the years to be very consistent in his message of pushing back against this particular cultural ideology. And as he rightly describes, and I think even, you know, a lot of people, including Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, agree, really fits the standard of the Supreme Court for being a religion, having this woke ideology that woke is a religion and is now a completely antithetical to the First Amendment. The left is trying to push this into our culture, into our hiring practices, into every aspect of our civil society that they possibly can, so that we have to participate in wokeness. And we do need to push back on this. And I think that Vivek has done a fantastic job of this. And I'm very excited that he's jumping into the race, primarily because I think that his voice now being amplified on a presidential candidate scale is very good for this country, regardless of who the GOP party ultimately nominates, whether that is President Trump, it's Ron DeSantis if he jumps in, or Vivek Ramaswamy, or someone else. And interestingly, other is currently polling higher than Nikki Haley in some online polls. So that's interesting. But regardless of who the eventual nominee is, I think it's very important that we as conservatives and as the Republican Party have a very deep and very wide bench of candidates that are willing to bring attention to these issues and willing to cohesively guide and direct the Republican Party. So now I'd like to welcome for the first time, after announcing, so presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. So my friend, good morning and congratulations on jumping into the race. I'm very excited to see this. So why are you running? And for people who are listening to this show and to and just looking overall at the trajectory toward 2024, what is the reason that now you're going from pushing Woke Inc. and that whole mentality into the presidential race and that forum?
Well, look, Jenna, I've actually been solving a lot of the problems, I would say, top down issues via the market, right? We have this merger of state power and corporate power that together do what neither can do on its own. That's what this whole ESG movement is about. That's what woke capitalism is about. But if I'm being really honest, it does take two to tango. And what I mean by that is what they're selling only gets sold if we have a culture that's willing to buy it up. And I think what's going on in America today is we're in the middle of this national identity crisis where we're all so hungry for purpose and meaning and identity at a point in our American history when faith and patriotism and hard work and family have disappeared. Those aren't problems that I could solve through the market. But I do think we can solve those problems by reviving the basic American ideals that set this nation into motion 250 years ago. And bluntly, I'm running for president to revive those ideals. I believe they still exist. I just think we need to rediscover them.
I completely agree. And as I've said here and as I've said in other forums, I love the fact that you are not waiting to inherit the blessings of liberty and inherit the responsibility of the torch of liberty, but are running ahead and saying we need to, as the millennial generation and the next generation, really be responsible for engaging in our civil society and in presidential races. And I love to see it. And so for those who are listening who are concerned potentially of this being more divisive and saying, well, shouldn't we all just get in line behind, you know, Donald Trump, who is the, you know, really the head of the Republican Party and the presumed sort of incumbent. You have a little bit, I think, unique campaign because you're not actually running against him. So describe what America First 2.0 means to you and why this isn't you versus Trump.
I mean, look, Donald Trump is a friend. I look up to what he did for this country in 2015 and 2016 coming in as an outsider. Frankly, that's part of what gives me inspiration to do this. But I also think that in order to put America first, we have to rediscover what America is. That's what I'm on a mission to do. And I think that once we do that, we can build on where the America First agenda left off, but to really take this to the next level. I've called for getting rid of affirmative action, which the President of the United States can do. There's an executive order in the Lyndon B. Johnson era that created affirmative action in this country. Every Republican president since him, including Trump, could have taken a pen and canceled it, but they didn't, because I think it's very difficult for certain, you know, be it people of certain age or race or whatever, to be able to actually take aim at a sacred cow like affirmative action. I'm going to be unapologetic about doing that. I've also been the only candidate who, to my awareness, has actually called for abandoning, and I mean completely abandoning, the climate religion that shackles the United States while leaving China untouched. And so I think this is about just taking that America First vision, but really driving it all the way through, taking it to the next level, dismantling the federal bureaucracy. I've already called for specifically shutting down government agencies like the Department of Education. And, you know, I think the other thing, Jen, is not only to get more specific with it, and I do expect to lead this field. I think, bluntly, I already do, but I lead this field when it comes to specificity of policy ideas. That's going to be one of the hallmarks of my campaign. But the other thing is, I really do care about this thing called national unity left at the end of it. You know, we're having this discussion about national divorce. I think divorce is one of these things that speaks itself into existence. And I'll tell you this, I think Donald Trump is misunderstood. I know him. He cares about national unity, too, just like I do, just like you do, just like probably many listeners here do, too. But the question is, who's actually going to deliver it? And if it was going to be delivered, it would have happened already. And so the question is, it shouldn't even be who. It should be the what and the why. What do we stand for? Why do we stand for it? Let's define that first as Republicans, as conservatives, as Americans. And once we do that, and I think that's what the first phase of this race ought to be about, then we can ask ourselves who's actually going to be the best standard bearer to carry that forward. I'm running because I think that's me, but even more important than that question is defining that agenda and why we stand for it. And I view my role as in this race right now as leading the way in defining exactly that.
And I'm talking with presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, and you mentioned the specificity of policy, and that is exactly why I would love to see you on the debate stage, to have this conversation in a national forum like that, that every concerned conservative will be tuning into, and pushing your fellow candidates to articulate with specificity what and why are we looking at specific policies for the future? And I think that that is so incredibly important. So how do you get to that debate stage? And for those listening who want to help you get there, even if currently they're supporting another candidate, I mean, I'm an advocate. I'm a friend of Donald Trump's as well, but I would also love to see you on that debate stage. How do you get there and how can people help?
Yeah, so look, this year, you can decide who you support next year, but this year is all about elevating the debate and defining that agenda. The debate stage will be crucial to my ability to do that. So the way to do it is small dollar donations, okay? The RNC hasn't exactly released its criteria, but they've signaled it's going to be based on number of unique small dollar donors. Go to Vivek2024.com right now, V-I-V-E-K2024.com, and donate $5. I mean, make it small. It doesn't really matter what the donation is. This isn't even about committing to who you're going to vote for. This is about committing to the fact that this year we need to define our agenda, define our mission as a conservative movement, define what it means to be an American. I will be your leader in that fight. I will be the person who gets that done this year in the first phase of this race, so this doesn't devolve into being some sort of battle of personalities. That doesn't do the country any good. I think if we're talking about exactly what the conservative movement stands for and where we head from here, I think we win this election next year in a landslide. And I'm running because I want to be that candidate. But we'll turn to that. That's up to the voters in 2024. This year, I think the debate stage is actually going to be crucial in defining that agenda. And honest to God, Jenna, if people went to Vivek2024.com right now, made it small, whatever the smallest dollar donation you want to make is, $5, that's fine. That, I think, actually gets us off the ground and onto a prominent spot in the debate stage so that we're able to drive this agenda forward, which is what I care most about for this country.
Yeah, and I think that's a fantastic goal, and I think that's necessary, especially in the wake of the last 2 years of absolute Biden administration insanity. And even over the last 6 years that we've seen what the Democrats put the Trump administration and Donald Trump personally through, and how we've had a lot of, I think, vitriol, even among ourselves as conservatives, kind of stepping back and saying, let's have a conversation about what we're unified on, instead of always looking at where we separate. Of course, we need to look at actions of our own people with genuine criticism so that we hold ourselves accountable first, but truly understanding where our platform is going and having the courage and the integrity to stand up on things like affirmative action, to stand up on things like all of these issues that you are speaking about with specificity in terms of policy. And so in full disclosure to all of my listeners here on this program, I have a buy-in on this. I believe in Vivek's vision on this. And I went yesterday to Vivek2024.com. I made that small dollar donation because I want to see him on that debate stage. I think it's good for the country. I think it's good for the next generation. I think it's good for the Republican Party overall. So I would encourage you to go do that. I have not made an endorsement. I haven't made a pledge on who I'm going to vote for in the primary. I think that is still an open question, but it's important that we get as many voices as possible, especially the ones that are saying and committing to saying to what Vivek is. I mean, I'm totally fine leaving people like, the John Boltons of the world in the background. He and his mustache can go into retirement. But this needs to be an important national conversation. So in just the last few minutes I have with you, Vivek, the concern, I think, of a lot of people by and large with the Trump administration and I think Republicans over the last 50 and 60 years has been the establishment swamp mentality. How are you pledging to combat that and not be affected or infected by the establishment swampy sort of Republicans that, if you become the nominee, would likely try to influence your personnel decisions?
Great question. I mean, I think that you go in to drain the swamp. What many learn is the swamp drains you. And I think that's just a time-tested philosophy in Washington, D.C. So here's my view on this. Okay, you can't be you cannot be incremental about this. You have to, I would say, take a, dare I say, even extreme position on this, which is you need to shut those agencies down. Once the managerial rot runs so deep, you can't just put a figurehead on top and reform it. You have to close it. You have to lock the doors, throw the key in the Potomac River, and then, when necessary, for those few agencies that still need to exist, build a new one to take its place. I think that applies to much of the national security apparatus in this country, which is a managerial rot today. I think it applies to the Department of Education. The Federal Department of Education is a silent source of wokeism across public schools in this country. People didn't realize that actually comes from the federal government. So I think take that three-letter alphabet soup and really close those agencies. I intend to actually fire half the people who work for the federal government. I don't care about the civil service protections. We'll call for repealing them. But I also believe in this thing called the Constitution, which says the President of the United States runs the executive branch. I think those civil service protections are unconstitutional because, coming from the private sector, I know this. If someone works for you and you can't fire them, that means they don't work for you. It means you work for them. And if I'm elected president, I refuse to work for the federal bureaucracy. But I also recognize that just saying that is easier said than done. What we actually need to do is fire the people, fire the managerial industrial complex around them, be willing to shut down agencies, be willing to, by executive order, impose an 8-year sunset clause for any federal bureaucrat. And I think it's going to require a strong exercise of actual executive power, grounded in Article 2 of the Constitution. That's the view I take, and I'm not going to apologize for it. And I think that may result in litigation going to the Supreme Court. I've studied the current Supreme Court. I think they're going to be on my side of this. And I think that that'll set a powerful precedent so that no future president has to go through what Donald Trump went through. But that is going to require taking this to the next level, going even further than he did. That is why I'm running.
And that really, to me, sounds like America First 2.0, because that has been, I think, the primary criticism of the Trump administration are the personnel decisions. And he drained the swamp to an extent, or at least shined a big bright light onto the swamp. But we know that there are so many federal bureaucrats that still remain in Washington, and we need to completely overhaul how our government is not working for us. It's we the people who get to have a say. So Vivek Ramaswamy, really appreciate your time today, and he's going to be a regular guest here on this show. So if you have any questions for him, contact us at AFR.net. Submit those questions. I would love to have this continuing conversation, especially with all of the people I know listening that genuinely care about these issues. We do need to be talking about the what and the why, not just the who, heading into 2024. So we'll be right back to talk about that more right here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
You ever find yourself caught in a maddening cycle of mundane routines? Ever feel like there's got to be something more? This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress concludes his series on choosing the extraordinary life. Then we'll begin a new study on the Proverbs. It's called The Solomon Secrets. Join us all this week for Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Acts 17:26 conveys to us the reality that we were born and placed in the 21st century by God's specific design. He determined before time where we would live and when we would live there. If you're in Minnesota, Mississippi, or Maine, God put you there on purpose. He's not surprised by the darkness we see around us, nor is he caught off guard by it. In fact, he specifically prepared for it by making sure you're alive right now. God can do whatever he wants, but he's chosen to use you and me as ambassadors of his kingdom. We are his torches to light up the darkness.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month, and that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan, double. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are talking about the road to 2024. Had Vivek Ramaswamy on in the last segment, and then Representative Mike Collins on in the first segment. And if you missed either of those, you can always go to AFR.net, listen to the podcast version of this show. But I wanted to address an issue that I actually talked about yesterday and got a lot of feedback on, and I love hearing from all of you and how you're contemplating these issues, what you're thinking, and response. And, you know, listen, you don't always have to agree with me. That is the wonderful thing about truly analyzing policy, analyzing decisions that our Republican, whether it's governors on the and state and local level or the federal government when Republicans are in control, the actions that they take. So we do need to agree first on what the Constitution says, what it allows, what can they do. That is the objective question that isn't given to our opinion on the matter. Then when we talk about what the government should do, that's where we can have a wide perspective of varying opinions. And if we look back at even the Constitutional Convention, our founders all agreed on the basic self-evident truth that our rights come from God, our creator, not our government. And it's the sole purpose of government to preserve and protect our rights. And they acknowledged this in the Declaration of Independence, which then gave the mandate for a system of government. And so at the Constitutional Convention, there was a ton of debate on the best form and implementation of how exactly that would work. And of course, that gave birth to our constitutional republic and our supreme law of the land. And so I think we need to take that very wise model and say we need to make sure that what is genuinely debatable is limited to the policy questions rather than limited to the constitutional questions. Of course, you know, in litigating the Constitution, there are, you know, different perspectives of how exactly that's applied. And the legal questions, though, I think are very, very different in terms of what is genuinely debatable. And if people had a better view overall, and I'm grateful for our current Supreme Court majority, that looked at this from an originalist perspective, we would actually find that there's not as much that's genuinely debatable in that context and those legal questions than there is in policy. So when we're looking at this, yesterday I talked about the actions of Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis, who I'm a huge fan of, and how he responded to the Disney issue and how the timeline of this is very important. And I got a lot of feedback on that, and I'm grateful for that. And I wanted to highlight one particular email from a listener named Mason. Mason, thanks so much for writing in. And by the way, if you want to comment on anything on the show, you have, you know, guest recommendation, literally anything, we'd love to hear from you. You can email Jenna, J-E-N-N-A, at afr.net, Jenna at afr.net, and we would love to hear from you. But Mason says, "Greetings, Jenna. I love you, but with all due respect, you got this one wrong. I am a former cast member at Disney World, and I understand your issue with Reedy Creek and special treatment, and I'm with you on this point. Where I disagree is with your stance on Disney's First Amendment right. Do not forget that Disney is a large corporation and as such gets large tax breaks that we ordinary citizens do not. Disney is not an individual, but is a business which should be more focused on making money, not inflicting their beliefs upon others, and certainly not attempting to influence our legal system." Well, Mason, a couple of responses to this, and that's just the first part of the email. But let's not forget that corporations are deemed as an individual under our constitutional framework. The Supreme Court has recognized that under our right to and our constitutionally protected right in the First Amendment of freedom of association, a corporation is a group of individuals. And when a corporation, for purposes of speech, for purposes of other exercise of constitutionally protected rights, they are looked at as a person under the Constitution, which I know what everyone is thinking. A corporation is a person under the Constitution, but an unborn child is not. Well, that's an insane problem. But I do agree with the case law and the Supreme Court precedent that sees a corporation as an individual. So that's an important point. But to your second point, that is saying that businesses should be focused on making money, not inflicting their beliefs on others, and not attempting to influence our legal system. Well, I would point to some of these really important cases that corporations and Christian corporations have litigated, like, for example, the Hobby Lobby opinion, and how and even, you know, Chick-fil-A, who has stood for Christian principles and values, and ultimately some of their stances in culture has changed and influenced society for good and for Christian opportunities by Christian-led businesses. and has influenced our legal system in some very, very important ways. And when we look at, for example, the hiring practices of businesses like Hobby Lobby and saying that they do not, as an exercise of their faith and their free exercise of religion, do not want to participate in giving health care to their employers that would also provide for abortion. And that's something that has been litigated, and thankfully our Supreme Court has held to the First Amendment constitutional standard. But I would push back on this and suggest that we can't just separate corporations into just a completely non-moral or amoral. And this is how my good friend Nancy Piercy would say in her book, Total Truth, that this is a separation of the secular and the sacred. If we are under the presumption and we're operating as Christians to say that the only forum that we can push our values and influence our values into society is only through the church, but our businesses are just amoral, they just operate without any sort of expressly Christian standards, then I think we've lost the whole scope of how our civil society is supposed to function. Businesses should operate according to moral truth, according to Christian principles, and absolutely should litigate and make sure to preserve and protect the right of business owners and the right of corporations to be in line with their sincerely held religious beliefs and make sure that we are influencing culture and we are impacting culture with our particular viewpoint. And I think the capitalist mentality that we have understood as an American philosophy completely justifies and goes right along with that understanding of how morality works and functions and is applied in our daily lives. And so what's interesting about this is that Disney as a company is actually doing that. They are just trying to influence the culture and influence government and lobby government and litigate potentially on certain things according to their woke religion. And that's very unfortunate. But at the same time, they do have the exact same constitutional protections that a Christian business would. And it has to be that way. Otherwise, the Constitution would not be an objective rule of law. I have to allow for and understand that the Constitution protects the speech, the association, the freedom of the press, the free exercise of religion, all of those things for someone who I vehemently disagree with, so that it also covers myself as well. And so we have to allow for this diversity of viewpoint and know that our Constitution protects the freedom of speech for people we disagree with, including corporations, not just those that we do agree with. But then also Mason goes down and asks a very important question. Why in the world would you compare DeSantis to, quote unquote, any twosome newsome? DeSantis has every right to remove such special treatment from a company who uses the Disney name, synonymous with family values, to push radical anti-family values. I agree. Newsom is a petty tyrant. Well, Mason, I would clarify this to say that I don't think that DeSantis is a petty tyrant. What I think is very important is that we compare this action like any other action by doing what the Supreme Court always does in the context of contemplating a precedent. They would hypothetically say, okay, if we are in favor of Ron DeSantis retaliating against Disney as a company for exercising their constitutionally protected right, then would we also be okay with that same standard applied to Gavin Newsom? Well, I would not be in favor of saying that if Ron DeSantis can retaliate against the constitutionally protected speech of a woke company, then I'm totally fine with Gavin Newsom, for example, retaliating against the constitutionally protected speech of, let's say, Hobby Lobby or Chick-fil-A or another expressly Christian corporation or individual. this is why precedent matters. And this is why I raise this issue to our attention, because we can't just look at outcomes. We can't just look at whether we agree or like the specific policy act or the executive's act or the legislative contemplation. We always have to look at precedent. We always have to go back to can that specific government agent actually constitutionally do what they're attempting to do? Or if they can't, then we cannot support it, even if we like the outcome. We also do need to be concerned about precedent, because if we lose that ground of precedent, that could get us into a whole host of trouble in other states where, I agree, Newsom absolutely is a petty tyrant. And I was part of the litigation team, and one of his primary counsel, his being Pastor John MacArthur, and his primary counsel in the state of California, suing the petty tyrant Gavin Newsom and the LA government, the Los Angeles government, in the wake of the church shutdowns. So, you know, again, we have to make sure that we are calling out the correct conservative viewpoint, regardless of whether we like this or not. So I agree that Disney is unfortunately not really going back to their ultimate vision from Walt Disney. And that's really sad to see, because I agree with you, Mason, that the Disney name is synonymous with family values. And there are people in the corporation now that are pushing radical anti-family values. And our response as individuals, of course, can be to boycott. We can choose a limited participation. We can choose a whole host of other things. We can boycott and we can retaliate with our dollars, absolutely, or any other legal mechanism of expressing to Disney, we don't want this type of woke agenda. But when it comes to the culture war, people like Ron DeSantis and anyone else within the government on the federal, state, or local level, they are bound by limited powers and by a separation of powers. And we have to make sure to bind them to their limited authority, because that's how we preserve and protect the rights for all in this country. We have to do that. Otherwise, we are suggesting that we only care about winning and outcome driven at all costs, and then we're no better than the Democrats. So I would simply submit to everyone who's looking at this topic, and the reason that I think it's important to dwell on this topic is so that we can hold ourselves accountable to not just being outcome driven, to not just championing the ideas and the policy actions of our governments. We always, first and foremost, have to look at the threshold question. Is this a constitutional action? And if it's not, well, Ron DeSantis can't do it any more than Gavin Newsom. And I am thankful, as a Christian conservative, that the Constitution binds Gavin Newsom. So I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, it should also bind Ron DeSantis. And if we want to be genuine culture warriors, I would also submit that we need to not look to the government to just be our savior in that regard. We have to do the hard work through corporations, through churches, through civil society, through our families, to do the hard work of impacting and influencing culture, and working at companies like the Disney Corporation and being a voice in some of those arenas. And however you choose for you and your family to look at the Disney situation, whether you want to give them dollars or not for, you know, for good things, or boycott them completely, whatever the response is that that you believe is the right one, we need to make sure that we are being the culture warriors instead of expecting that our government does that for us. Now, of course, the government has an obligation to protect morality in society, to do justice, to promote good, to restrain evil. That is within their mandate as a government institution. But we can't sit back and say, Ron DeSantis, you go in Florida, and, you know, glad to see you doing something. And but as for me and myself, I'm just going to have an apolitical, amoral, meaning not moral, not immoral, not overtly moral position on how my engagement or my company's engagement in civil society works. So I'm really glad to hear from a lot of you on this issue. I hope that that clarifies a few things. And Mason ends by saying thank you for your unwavering support for our beloved Donald Trump. Really appreciate that as well. Very happy to call him a good friend. We kind of ran out of time this morning. I do want to open up the phone lines later this week. But if you have comments, then go ahead and send us an email at jenna@afr.net. That's jenna@afr.net. I'd love to know what is on your mind, how you're contemplating these issues, and I have absolutely loved our AFR audience and family. So looking forward to joining you more tomorrow morning. I'm Jenna Ellis. You've been listening to Jenna Ellis in the Morning, and also follow us on Facebook and also on Twitter at Jenna Ellis AM. You will see some highlights, some other things about the show. Give us a follow there. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Make it a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.